Well, I think we have a quorum. This is Tom Reeves. So I'll call the meeting to get to order at 8:03 a.m. on January 18th.
Come on, man. You fool. Important stuff. Where's my hockey puck? You can turn it off. Turn me off, man. All right.
So I'll take any public comment on non-agenda items. Hearing none, I'll ask for conflict of interest declarations. I'll start with Brian Wheeler.
I don't believe I will have any today, but I will I'll keep track of it.
Okay.
Ron, the agenda, I'll have anything to present for conflicts today. Okay. Just one item to take. Thank you.
Dick Fast.
None, thank you.
Peter Manka.
None.
Mike Dukenoy?
None.
Bill Schrocktrier? Is Mike Wilsinski on the call?
Yeah,
he's here.
He's in the room.
Oh, he's there. Okay. Any for you?
None.
Then I'll move on to the consent agenda. We have the minutes, financial reports, and I'm not sure whether that includes the audit or not. I don't think it does. And the sewer and water operator reports. Any comments or questions from the board?
I have one correction to the sewer operator's report, and it's under the pumping volume under the first section here. In the board packet, it was reported we had 6.85 million gallons. The number is actually 5.16 million gallons. So I will replace that page for the archive board packet if that number changes.
Any other comments or questions?
I think in the board packet, were we missing the water report?
Jim's on vacation and he emailed me something. I think it might have been yesterday, so nothing in the packet at this time.
Okay, I just want to make sure if we're approving it, we maybe have that out of there.
I got something from Jim Musket yesterday, an email, so talking about water volumes, but there was no report attached.
Right.
Well, if there are no further questions or comments, I'll entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda.
I'll make that motion. This is Brian.
Yep. Brian made some motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Mike Wilsinski, second. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Passes unanimously. We are on to the fiscal year 2021 audit report. And I'll turn that over to Matt Cope.
Thank you. Good morning. And I'll be real quick. I just want to say thank you to Ron, Terry, and Marlene for being accommodating during the audit process this year. It always helps it go smoothly and quickly. I'll kick it off here with the reports. We have two reports as we have in the past. The basic financial statement report, we have issued an unmodified opinion over those basic financial statements. That's a clean opinion. For the compliance and internal control report related to Yellow Book, we have no significant deficiencies in internal control or material weaknesses. And we have no instances of noncompliance that we've found during our audit. So that's another clean report, clean opinion. We had a few proposed adjustments this year, a little out of the norm due to the commitment from the resort tax district. You'll see an additional $24 million booked in the assets section of the statement of financial position. That's just booking the minimum contribution due from that other governmental entity. And then there'll be a deferred inflow or similar to a deferred revenue, unearned revenue in the liabilities section of that statement of financial position as well. And that will offset that due from. And then that deferred inflow will be recorded on an annual basis whenever those contributions are received in that year. So you won't see that revenue hit the financial statements until they actually make those payments. So that was the most significant adjustment. And then we had another one where we just booked the bond issuance costs related to the new bond in 2021. It was just the legal costs associated and the financial related costs associated with that bond. Are there any questions about the audit report or any of the presentation items in the annual financial report?
How did you handle, Matt, this is Ron, how did you handle the resort tax commitment?
So if you looking at, let's see, if we're looking at page 13 of the PDF document.
Page 13, let me get there.
Or actually, it'll be, if you're looking at it that way, it'll be page 10.
And right here?
Yes, sir. So in that document, you'll see down there in the non-current assets, you have a due from other government, a non-current. That's the non-current portion, the amount that will be received after 12 months, outside of 12 months, that's 21 million. And then you've got the roughly 2.8 that's sitting in current that should be received in fiscal year 2022. That's the minimum contribution. According to the installment schedule that was in the amended agreement with that district. And then you'll see if you go to the next page, you'll see that the infrastructure tax agreement, that full amount that's outstanding as of the end of the year, is sitting in deferred inflows of resources. So it's not hitting your revenue in this fiscal year. And that will be reduced each year as you receive contributions.
Okay, thank you.
Are there any other more comments or questions from the board? If not, I'd entertain a motion to accept the audit report for 2021.
I'll so move.
Second. Motion from Bill Shropshire, second from Mike Wilsinski, or was that Peter Manka?
Peter Manka, yep.
Peter Manka. Any further discussions? Any public comment? Hearing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor, say aye.
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 So Matt, one question. So does this now need to be filed with the state? I know we filed something before calendar year end, and do you now send this up to Department of Administration?
Yeah, so the one that was filed by the end of the year was the unaudited AFR, and that just had your filing fee form included. So you had to pay your dues associated with the revenue. That revenue figure did not change. So that fee is fine. And then we'll just file this in the audit section with the Department of Legislation or the Department of Administration. And that just has the audit data elements with how many hours and how much was billed and so on and so forth. And everything should be fine.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Matt. Moving on, we have the WGS source water capacity plan update proposal.
I believe Mark Kinane's on the meeting. Mark, are you there?
I am here.
So in the board packet under business action, we've got two proposals that Mark submitted. The first one for the water source capacity plan update. This is a follow-up to a board directive to work on updating our 2015 report. So Mark has given us a proposal to do that. I put a table in my report that shows the scope tasks and associated cost and the total contract, which is $38,940 for this one. Both of these proposals are unbudgeted projects for us. So these funding for this will come out of our operating reserve, correct, Terry?
Yes.
Okay. Mark, do you want to touch on it briefly with us?
Sure. On the source capacity, well, I like to try and extend the work done prior. So I've got some more advanced elements in the source capacity plan. But the general scope is, you know, as it was shown in Ron's table, the detail budget that I provide in the proposal kind of goes through the nuts and bolts, or at least headlines them. But basically, you know, evaluate the existing source capacity, then evaluate the water use analysis, and look at the source capacity requirements is the difference between what you have and what you need. I do have meetings with the staff at that point, so we can kind of review what I have and get input and direction from the district. And then subsequent to that, I'll go on to the source capacity alternatives. I've got a couple of days of time to look into conservation programs. So this would be, you know, look at what the district has in that area, but identify some new options. I've also got some time for irrigation supply from reuse. So this would be just a consideration of extending the reuse irrigation to other areas. And then finally, potable supply from reuse. Look at there is an option where this might be feasible, you know, as a small fraction of the reuse that gets converted into a direct potable reuse option. And then the most of that, that task goes into new source development. And you know, this project ends up with a report and, you know, a board meeting at the end. And, you know, if anyone has questions now on that or specific concerns or interests, you know, I could certainly take that info down now, and that would be useful. So. Okay, if there's no questions in particular, on that source capacity, I'll talk about the second proposal is to get both wells, test wells 7 and 8, approved by DEQ for use in the water system and to get them onto the district's existing water rights. So the first step in that is I would draft up an easement document for the district to use with Big Sky Resort. And that can be done this week or next week and get the ball rolling on that. And, you know, once that is, you know, the parties are in agreement on that, then the next step is to get the deviation from DEQ for both those wells. So that's kind of a phased approach that spends the minimum to get to that point. And once DEQ approves the wells, then, and there's a source water assessment report that's required. And Since these wells are already constructed, I have what I call an as-built report. That goes into a DEQ submittal where DEQ actually approves the wells for use in the water system. So at that point, they can be, you know, equipped with pumps and so on. Now there's that all has to that engineering work is subsequent to this. So, you know, there'd have to be another submittal for the pipelines and so on to DEQ. This project does not do that part. As far as the water right goes, at least right now, you know, I think the appropriate thing is you add these wells onto the Mountain 5 and 6 water right through a change application. And, you know, so I've got that identified, all the steps there. And I show in detail the steps of just headlines of the various tasks that need to be completed for that submittal. And so that would be, that's what that project is for, is you know, the wells would, you know, if all goes well, the wells are approved for use in the water system and the water right filing is underway. I do have redundant well form submittal, which is a minor deal to submit, but this water right will take a couple of years to go through DEQ, if not longer, DNRC, if not longer. They may get faster, I suppose, but what I'm seeing now is, you know, you're certainly in excess of a year into 2 years to get to the point where they actually evaluate if they're going to approve it or not. So you're correct and complete after a year and a half, and then they go through, then they get 120 days to decide if they're going to approve it or not. You of course know by then what their concerns are, if any, and this should be, I would expect this to be a fairly easy approval because the water right for Mountain 5 and 6 is not yet fully perfected. And so this step is just a step to work towards full perfection of the right. So there's no historic use analysis. Both wells are bedrock wells. They're offset farther from the Middle Fork channel than 5 and 6 are. So, you know, it's should be a straightforward submittal. So that's the two projects. And I'm happy to take any questions anyone might have on those.
Was one of the wells located pretty close to sewer line? It required some sort of is that included in your proposal to work through that process as well?
Sorry, I'm not hearing that.
Mark, so the question is, one of the wells is within 100 feet of the sewer main. So does your proposal cover dealing with that?
That's what the deviation is for, yeah. Yeah, so the deviation is the control, the well isolation zone. There's actually three deviation standards that will go into the one deviation request. One is the well isolation zone is not going to be in full control of the district. The other is proximity to the sewer. And the third is the casing size of 6-inch is not quite the size they would like for a 6-inch pump. They would want an 8-inch casing. So I'm going to put in for all three of those deviations. And I've discussed it with DEQ, and, you know, they can't tell you a thumbs up on it just on a phone call. I'm only talking with one person. They put this in front of a deviation committee, but giving the seal on the well and that there is treatment planned for these wells, you know, it's generally should be accepted. I would expect it to pass.
Mark, last time we talked, you were going to try to line up a surveyor to survey in those well points. Did that work get done yet?
Well, what I thought about that, Ron, was with the GIS and the parcel data in it and so on, I can get an easement document set up for the district and the resort to look at that's relevant. And I can I can use that same thing in the deviation. And then I think once we get steps one and two approved by both the resort and DEQ, then we'll need to get that survey done.
Okay.
And I thought, let's just save the money on doing that until we know this is all going to work out at the locations that the district has now.
Very good.
Mark, this is Tom Reeves. Could you review what the, I think it's well 8 is going to require treatment. Can you review what the treatment will be and why?
You know, that's in the PER that the district's prepared for the ARPA. So I'm not entirely familiar with what that is at this time. In fact, I just got the final version of that report yesterday, and I was not working yesterday. But one of the aspects of it is going to be four-log virus inactivation, and I'm not sure what method they're using to get to that, but certainly the simplest one is chlorination. But that would be something that the A2S engineers could respond to on that, and I don't have that right now, Tom. So,
Tom, we had some discussions with Scott Buecher last time about potentials. There's several options out there as far as how these wells could be treated, and then it's also going to depend on you know, what other wells we bring into this scenario collectively to determine if blending of the wells will be enough to decrease certain contaminants, or if we'll actually have to do treatment on some of the other contaminants that are found. I believe it's 5 and 6, right?
Yep. And the PER went in just as we talked about last month, with chlorination being the plan. And we have a draft scope for that final design that sent over to Ron yesterday that we'll have to go through in the next week or two with him and finalize what will be in that engineering design package. But that's the plan for now, is still just go with chlorine.
And you know, Brian, I could add that the deviation for the proximity to the sanitary is gonna, it may not need that, but that will be a you know, meeting the four log virus inactivation, I think, will be a significant benefit to that deviation being successful.
Hey, Brian, I'm assuming you're okay with at least pursuing these easements before we get ahead of ourselves.
Oh yeah, I mean, we've got to run it through the gauntlet, whether it's the bondholders, anything, easement goes through our financing, but I'm sure we'll come up with some.
Sure. Fundamentally, you're okay with the locations of these?
You know, we got to look a little, I'd like to have a little more detail on them. In other words, know what the setbacks are and things like that are on them. And that's a game changer. It's going to change, and it's a good question, Mike, because it changes and it may affect an adjacent property owner to blame if it has a certain setback. So, I think this is the next step. I will say this. I'm a little surprised it popped up today. You know, it just kind of caught me off guard that we'd be tracking with easements in this type of base. But we'll put it at the top of the list with a number of other things going, and let's make sure that we prioritize it, everyone at this table.
And that's why it's at the top of the scope, because it's the rest of it's pointless if we can't work with the law points that we have.
I think we need a little more data to say a full-blown yes, and then I'll put a narrative together for a submittal, and we'll go from there. But
I would say at this point in time, it's not even a concurrent path. You're kind of showing a concurrent path, Mark, of $38,000 spend and $30,000 spend for some other permitting and stuff. But isn't task one of paragraph C first and foremost, and then we move on with the rest?
Yeah, that's how I see it. Yeah, in fact, task one and two.
Yeah.
So the plan here would be let's get tasks one underway and resolved. And this
which task one are we talking about? Because you have a bunch
the
of
one tires. Under C.
All yeah. right.
And then if assuming one gets resolved satisfactorily, we move on to task two below it. And assuming task two is approved by DEQ, then we move on to task three, four, and five.
And okay, that's given Brian a good shake at that anyways, just so we don't get ahead of ourselves spending all this money and have that story to Boeing as well.
No, yeah, that's the way it is in the proposal too, Mike, okay. is to get this done. And Brian, that task one, I'll be, you know, I'll have both the language for the easement and the maps showing the location of the well and where the easement applies on the parcels.
You know, I think it's just the mechanics. As I said, I do a number of easements a year and they can stall out. I just don't want to give the impression that it's a slam dunk every time with these lenders. You know, something like the tunnel easement out there that we did with the BSCO took me 6 months. Now that was very complicated and needed a lot of information, but I just don't want to oversimplify this. And Mike, it's good to bring it up now so everybody understands. We'll I'm going to put it at the top of my list as well as a Boeing rep. But yeah, they take some time and it takes a little finesse to get to the right people. Got to remember that you're dealing with a board in San Francisco when you put these out there. And if it does impact, you know, negatively impact the development of that property, the red flags pop. So any easement, of course, is not an asset to a property. So we have to tell them why it's for the greater good. That's it.
Ron, you were saying that we didn't have this projected budgetarily. The sources of funds are going to just come from
reserve.
Just reserve.
Water reserve, yeah. I think we want to get going on these, so it is what it is as far as funding it.
Do we need to make a motion?
Well, I'd like two.
On both of these, yeah.
I'd like two motions since we have two proposals, one for the source capacity update, a second motion for the item C there for the record.
I have one question for Brian Wheeler. Is this well 8, is that property slated to be a parking lot or something else?
You know, it's entitled, great question. It's entitled for a condo, correct? And that's why I want to make sure that we're clear on how much of these setbacks will impede the development of it. But I've said it before, and people of Boeing might disagree with me. I think that will be a parking lot as long as everybody at this table is still working. You just can't build these parking garages, and that, of course, is being used as a parking lot. But in the master plan, our ODP, overall development plan filing, is a condo track. It has entitlement rights for a condo track. So you just got to work around it. Look, I think we all understand the location of water is the most important thing to everyone in Big Sky right now. So, and the proximity of this well is so attractive. So, yeah, it'd be great to pull it up so everybody knows what we're talking about and why I would be that concerned with it.
So,
you know, and we should show why it could affect the neighbor as well.
Right. Well, 7 was drilled right here. Well, 8 was drilled right over here. We got a sewer main that runs down the road. So you can see the Green Line sewer. Mark, one other question I have is, will these just be wellheads with no buildings or structures for SCADA or anything else?
I think that you could build these as wellheads, but with a local power service. And so depending on how that turns out, you know, you can mount VFDs out there, you know, on a panel. You could do something similar to like what you have at Mountain 5 and 6. You could actually do a little differently from that. Those aren't VFDs, but you could have something. You'll need something, I would expect, like that. And you know, for SCADA, I'm not sure how you could handle that. If you'd handle that remotely, you might have.
It'd be a rate.
You might have a SCADA panel and antenna out there. I'm not sure, but.
Yeah. I'd make, again, just to avoid confusion and so everybody can consider this. So you see the location. The timber line is a property boundary with our neighbor to the east. So he has plans to develop that in a conduit, correct? So I have to make sure that his utility plans or his needs aren't impacted by this as well. So we want to make sure we place it in there. I think the best thing we could do, Mark, would be to get the plat. You have the plat overlay right now. And I think what's going to be what I will need in the future is need to show the setbacks for Cascade first and foremost, so that, you know, ideally it sits in a setback for Cascade, maybe crosshatch that, and then the setbacks that are needed for this request, and then show the utility plans for it. You know, one thing that is on this right here to consider, this was called a Blue Green site. We were doing a joint venture with Blue Green. Yeah. And why it's cleared the way it is cleared is because they were coming in and they were going to build a property about the size of the village center of the Mountain Inn. And they did do the storm range system going along that northern boundary of the property. So I want to make sure that everything is considered from what's there, the topography. It's actually a bench system you can see running north and south. You got to look at the drainage on that site. It pools and want to make sure that we're within compliance. That's all. The location is actually, not to give all the doom and gloom, the location is actually a good one for development in the sense that it's not in the center of it. It's funny that well 7 may have been a better site for us in some ways, just because if you'd asked me if that was going to be a parking lot, I'd say it probably would be a parking lot forever, just because of the fact it's like a rat's nest of utilities going through there from the propane to the Northwest Energy all the way through. So that's the deal, and we'll get on it, but we need to have a narrative to present based on that.
7 kind of, is that a contract as well?
It is, but there are so many easements that go right through the center of it that the well would be a better location there, because I think that will always be, couldn't build over those easements. So that's it. I think it's just something we got to start fast tracking. And look, I get it. I think the key to this when I'm representing the request is not just the source, but the location to the mains too. I mean, you may want to just share why it's such a good location to find water as well.
You think just a paragraph or two on that?
Yeah. You know, look, We're making a sales presentation here. We're making a sales presentation. There you go.
Yeah, so there's the water line layer. At both wells, you can throw a rock to the water mains. There's a little bit of an issue with the road right away in well 8, making sure we're off of that. So that's part of the...
You're right on it.
We're really...
I mean, you are. I stood there and said, I think you're in it.
Mark, I would make a formal memo about this and tell the story and paint the picture. Brian's knowledge of it isn't always conveyable to the people he has to talk to. So I would make a memo, have exhibits, make a professional presentation out of it and get it to Brian so he has something to forward that's not just dialogue over the phone.
I like having your name and credentials on there, Mark, as well. You know? But I'm going to say, don't take my word for it. This is what the experts say. So, yeah, look, it's that important. So
I think it's worth pointing out that the value of these wells is considerably different to the district, well 8 versus well 7. That well 8 is a huge asset given the water quality that's coming out of there. And given the proposal to kind of potentially incorporate wells 5 and 6, you're relying on that well 8 is essentially dilution for some of the contaminants that are found in the other wells. So it's a huge asset right now. That well 7 kind of falls in line with a lot of the other wells we found water quality wise. So, you know, I don't know how that affects the process, but I mean, as far as them you know, if it was one or the other, or it was priorities, there's certainly an emphasis on well eight versus well seven.
It's great to hit that point. You know, one thing I'm looking at, anytime you just look at a development plan, you say, okay, if I can't construct a building over the top of it, what can I construct? You know, Mark, just not to go too deep in it, but can you have parking within, you know, 20 feet of this thing?
Yeah. I've done a few of these where we have parking. Yeah.
So
that's been accepted.
The biggest liability for us would be that we can't design a building over the top of it, but we can design parking for the building over the top of it. That would be the key response to, wow, is it impacting the development rights of the property? Well, as long as it's designed properly, it shouldn't have a negative on it. I would consider Howden's property though, for sure. I think if Chris is on, made the case, man.
Now, I want to mention, Peter, I think you were talking about the water quality. Okay, I had an error in my original memo on these test wells. Mountain 8 actually has iron and manganese in it. The test well 8 does. And that's why we brought test well 7 back into the mix here. It is non-detect for arsenic. But it is not as good as what I had in the original document. And I'd gone back to the lab that for some reason, I the metals were all non-detect in the original report I got. Well, it turns out it left out iron and manganese. So those were not non-detect.
So is that a never mind, Peter?
it's worth reevaluating.
That's right, I'm glad you brought it up.
Yeah.
Like I said, we're going to leave it to Mark to give me the best sales pitch.
Right, so right.
I think it's great we're at this stage. You know, look, let's face it, in the last couple of months with everything going on with development in the area, big question. I just had a meeting yesterday down with some owners up in Cascade saying, I'm hearing we're running out of water, we're doing this and that. It's great to have something to share moving forward, that we have some solutions on the table, not just challenges. So great. Let's get on it.
Hey, Mark, this is Dick. Can you remind me again what the flow operational flow would be from those two wells?
So this is, if you look at the map, I just kind of framed this. This is really described more in the engineering PER that went to ARPA. But so the overall plan would be to take these two new wells, 7 and 8, Cascade Wells 5, which is here, Cascade Wells 6 here, and we're looking at tying in Mountain Village Well 3, and we've got the two other wells here. So basically, these wells would become the water supply that would go up to the tank at the north end of Section 19 Cascade Subdivision. The other wells would go to the mountainside and supply water to the Mountain Village core area. So in a big picture, we're splitting the system, adding water supply, which will eventually come around and pick up the Montana Club and some of the developments that are over toward the mountain, but don't have as much demand on them.
You know,
so they come around here to pick up all this. So we're trying to build a system that has enough pressure to feed this stuff, and then put the Mountain Village core area on its own water supply. So that's all kind of described in that PER, which we'll talk about a little more when we get to it on the agenda here. But
hey, Mark, just to prep you as well, that was a great point, Ron, in the sense that this really is a reconfiguration and an upgrade that will give us at least phasing to supply adequate pressure to the bottom Challenger, plus or minus.
Right.
So yeah. I mean, so that's my point, is a part of the pitch. This isn't, hey, we want water in the core and in the contract. This has direct benefit up to future phases of the Montana Club in development and bottom of Challenger, which is a part of our ODP that's been submitted and reviewed by these guys. So really, really play on that benefit for future development. That's all.
My estimated rate on that, well, Dick, is 110. GPM, and that's about, you know, they both have flow limiting aspects in the response, right? And they're both hydraulically connected, 7 and 8. So, you know, you'd equip these for, you know, combined capacity on that same order. You know, you can always go a little higher with VFDs because you can, through the controls of the variable frequency drive, you can tweak the rates that the wells run at. And that's what I'd recommend on all these, because you'll learn more about their operation as you use them. And but anyway, that's kind of the rate. The annual volume's about 56 acre feet, I estimated. But, you know, I did point out in that report, you know, there is a limited recharge effect that you see in the test data to these.
Dick, I put up the other wells, so this is Mountain 1, Mountain 2, Mountain 7. We'll end up renaming Test Well 7 something different, because this is Mountain Village 7.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we'll have to do that.
Yeah, as water-righted, that's Mountain 7. That's the one YC drilled. And then Mountain Well 4. So these wells become the supply then for the Mountain Village water tank, which has been rehabbed and is ready to go. It's a 500,000 gallon tank, sits up here.
Thank you.
Hey, Mark, yes. Given where we are in the timeline with this, the ARPA funding and looking at treatment for the Cascade side of the system, could you kind of put together the water quality data on those wells, the 7-8, test 7-8, 5-6, and 4, so we can, you know, kind of look at that and get the best information to Scott so he's, you know, informed and prepared as we move through that process?
You know, I think Scott has all that. The
I guess
has it for the test wells.
The updates to the test well 8.
Yeah, he has that. Yeah.
Oh, he does.
Yeah, I issued a revised version of that memo.
Okay.
Yeah, it was an 11th hour move, but Kelsey got that data into the PER and wrote it up as still sticking with chlorine. Kelsey, you might chime in here, but the iron and manganese are not, you know, so high that we have to filter. And it was pretty clear that the group is thinking, let's set it up so we can chlorinate, blend, and we'll experiment with different blends and with chlorination, send it to the tank. And, you know, if at some point in the future, one or multiple wells requires filtration, then we'll deal with it once we have better data, long-term data.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, I just want to make sure that you had that that latest data on the test well, sir.
Yep. Thanks.
Go ahead, Scott.
Peter, you had brought up ozone after the meeting as just a don't paint us into a corner where we couldn't switch off chlorine someday if it became an issue with residents or anything like that. So, you know, just allow enough floor space and process room and a location to use other oxidants if the district wants to down the road.
Sure. And that's a concern Tom Reeves had brought up as well, as far as how this pans out with the residents and the water quality that they're delivered. So, yeah, it's nice to have those options open moving forward.
All right. I think we have two proposals. If there's no other comments from the board, we have the source water capacity plan update proposal. So I would take a motion on that first.
Motion to approve.
That's from Mike Wilsinski.
Yes.
A motion and a second.
I'll second. Brian Wheeler.
Brian Wheeler seconds. Any further discussion? Any public comment? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Aye. The second proposal is for the WGS proposal for DEQ approval and water rights permitting for test wells 7 and 8.
I'll make a motion to approve the proposal for DEQ approval and water right permitting for test wells 7 and 8.
I believe that's Peter Manka made a motion.
I'll second, Tom.
Dick Fast seconds. Any further discussion?
I just want to make sure we're not going to spend any money in the other tasks until this easement thing is behind us.
Good point.
I would say this, you know, just it's a good comment, but given the timeline, sometimes you have to work on a concurrent plan that you hate to lose time on as well. I think that it just needs frequent communication and updates to try to work on parallel paths.
Mike, would you?
Yeah, I think, Mike, your point is well taken, but I think having Ron having the ability to say, well, do we need to have a parallel path or not? I'm certainly comfortable letting him make that decision.
Yeah, that's fine. I just want to make sure the focus is on getting this easement resolved and make sure we have validity to the project.
You're right.
Absolutely. Is there a fork in the road which we should delineate as some time that we need to resolve the easement by before we proceed to, let's say, task 3, 4, and 5?
No. Task 2, no. If we put a timeline on it, Brian's going to roll over. His timeline is at the mercy of the people he's got to get approval from. I've been there before with him.
Thank you, Mike. I think you understand more than anyone in this room. 11 managers in different schools have no idea where Sitting Bull Road is.
Well, let's just make every effort to expend funds that potentially are not going anywhere. If you seem like you're hitting a big roadblock, Brian, maybe you can let us know and we can be advised and kind of proceed with it.
We're gonna give this the full court press. That's it. I get it. It's been going on, but I also hate to understate sometimes.
Yeah,
but hey, we're good. We're all saying the same.
Well, we appreciate the cooperation you've given us just to drill these test wells to start without easements or anything. So
yeah, thanks, Brian.
Absolutely.
All right, I'm opening up for any public comment on this. Hearing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. Passes unanimously. All right, we are on to Powder Light. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
We're on to Powder Light Lot 3 permit application.
Just to give you an update, this will get pushed off to the February meeting for a decision, but I put the actual permit, the permit fee calculations, the issues wrapped around the deficiency in the permit. Path that it's on, and I've talked to Ryder, who's on the meeting, Bancroft with Low Mountain Land. The path that it's on is that they're going to go to the resort tax. Also talked to Danny yesterday from resort tax to get permission to make a draw from the 500 SFE pool, which is going to change to actually 600 to be used for building 3. And so they're talking to resort tax. They're also talking to the housing trust. Laura Seafang's on the meeting to get a support letter that the Housing Trust supports this project to kind of vet this through the Resort Tax Board. We don't have all that done for this meeting, but that's the path it's on. This will be pushed off for the February meeting. That said, Kreider or Laura, do you have anything to add to it?
This is Laura. No, I think that covers it. The Big Sky Housing Trust Board is in support of this request, but we want to make sure the timing of use of the SFEs fits with the Water and Sewer Board's previously stated concerns as far as capacity goes. So we're just trying to make sure we coordinate all that.
And I talked to Kreider yesterday. Their timing works to push this off a month. So there's no decision needed from our board today on this permit. I kind of framed the issue in my manager's report. The deficit's 13.05 SFEs to make the permit whole.
One thing that we do need to make sure that we have in our pocket is, I know Steve Johnson's on the call and he was working on a more clear definition of what is classified as affordable housing. Steve, do you have any update as to how that work is going?
I have drafted that. Laura has looked at it. We have some discussion that we need to have. So it's underway, but it's not concluded yet.
Okay. Well, thanks for your work, Steve.
Sure.
The second issue, which we did talk about at the last meeting, I think it's worth some discussion today, had to do with the fact that, you know, we've got two individual parcels of land, lot three, lot four. Under the old reallocation procedures, you know, you would need to get permission to move the 12 SFEs that were unused on lot four to lot three. And we talked about, well, should we make them aggregate these two lots to accommodate the use of the remainder from lot four to be used for the building three permit? I weighed in on this in my report. I see that as just an unnecessary step in this because we sunsetted the procedures that were used for reallocation back in 2013 with our ordinance amendment. It ended December of 2015. So those requirements went away. So I don't think that, you know, the board necessarily has to make them go combine these two lots and go through a subdivision application to do that. These subdivision things are taking longer and longer to DQ. And I just see it as busy work that is unnecessary, and I said it in my report, unless there's some compelling legal reason that would have to be done. So I don't think that is, but Susan can tell us if there is. But so I just recited, this is directly out of our ordinance, word for word.
Yeah, my only reason for wanting, considering aggregation was that I wanted to comply with our ordinance. And if there's a way that we can get around this with the existing ordinance, I'm not interested in people doing busy work.
Yeah. Me too.
Is there something to be said about updating the ordinance to, it's kind of a hindrance to land planning, I guess, for the most part. Like, think about the track that we were just looking at with this well on it on Boeing's property. Does that have SFEs applied to it? Basically, this, you know, maybe it's available to transfer over, but you can't move stuff to your own property adjacent to itself. Or I don't know, is this problem going to show its head like a bunch of other times with other properties throughout the district?
Well, it's a fair comment. We're working on amendments to this ordinance right now, which I talked about under old business with ordinance 97-1001. So maybe there's some additional things that we need to look at this section in particular that maybe needs amending. But
I think the genesis of it was to stop brokering SFEs, right? It's a shame, exactly, that, you know, yeah, people were selling SFEs on the commodity markets or whatever. But if you have condominium tracts in a row and you've speculated 10 years ago how you're going to, you know, develop those condominium tracts or whatever it is, and, you know, markets change, projects change, zoning changes, the county commissioners control some of the development plans as well, county planning controls it. And any little snafu in that, you can't fix it under this ordinance if that's the way it's written.
Right.
The whole genesis of this ordinance was to exactly stop what Mike was alluding to is the secondary market of trading among developers SFEs.
So maybe we need to rethink that language on a from a practical perspective and thwart the brokering of SFEs, but also allow common ownership of common lot lines to actually work.
Yeah. Mike, if you're preaching to the choir with me, I think until recently it was the only vote that I ever was on the opposite side on like a 6 or 7 to 1 vote. And I looked at it this way, to be clear, entities, you know, the big 3 or 4 entities are able to reallocate within their property. That's a fact, whether it's Boyne, Cross Harbor, Town Center. I'm assuming Lone Moose will be able to do that. So you have 4 entities that are able to shift around in parcels. At the time, I get it. It was, quote, the shenanigan vote. Packy was like, well, you get these shenanigans going. People are selling them as a commodity. And I think it became polarized. It wasn't, let's stop all reallocation. When in fact, the system of saying if you own both properties and maybe restricting it with these quick claim deeds or own it for 2 years, 3 years, whatever it is. So you couldn't go in and quick claim on Friday, reallocate on Tuesday. That was my response back then. So I just want to refresh that. And at the time, I thought I had some support on that. And then we went to the vote. And I just never forget Packy looking over and going, sorry, Brian. And the guy that was pounding his fist, and I'm not complaining about it, but the guy was kind of my mentor coming on the board, was Les Mobile.
Yeah.
I mean, he campaigned behind, you know, he had that campaign full tilt, and I thought I was maybe going to come out on that one. But yeah, it was a 6 or 7 to 1 against. So and it wasn't a Boyne issue because we still have the ability to reallocate. I just said, why do 4 of us have it, but no one else if they're in the plan? But I also get, quote, the shenanigans side. They were being sold, 100% being sold. So that's just a recap, and I think it would be a good thing to explore because, you know, it's the guy that owns a couple tracks or something like we're talking. It's like this entity is a great example, but we do have an ordinance. So that's my quick 2 cents. Thanks, Mike, for bringing it up.
Well, maybe it's the language that Ron has highlighted there. Maybe we twist that language a little bit to at least allow us an accommodation for something that makes common sense. I'm not talking about Powder Light specifically, but just in general.
No. And I wasn't talking about Powder Light 8 years ago. I get it. I get what was going on. Same thing with Jack and Jill bathrooms. I remember those being, you had 2 toilets sitting next to each other back when it was bathrooms and bedrooms. You're like, wait a minute, are you really going to use these 2 toilets? Of course, a wall was going in as soon as you finished the construction. There were shenanigans.
Think with the current vein of planning and the planning board and zoning and everything else, these things get, even if you wanted to follow the SFE allocations on your property adjacent to another property that you own, sometimes it doesn't work out that way just from an entitlement perspective.
Yeah. Good call.
Back to your comment, Mike, I do think a lot of this narrative can come out because at the time this was approved in May of 2013, we put forward that this is going to end December 2015, but then we never came in after it sunsetted to remove all this reallocation procedure out of the ordinance. So I think a lot of this could come out.
So should we make an effort to try to redraft that language to protect the district and protect commodity trading and all that stuff and give us a little bit of flexibility for common sense situations like some of these ones we're looking at?
Yeah, and that's why I highlighted the exceptions because as time changes, for example, we're seeing a lot more work housing projects that we didn't see back in those days. And those would be examples of why you need to hold on to the case-by-case provision of this. But a lot of the details from the 2 parcels, I think a lot of that could come out of here. And I'll talk to Susan about doing that because we're working on amendments to it anyway.
You know, Mike, at the time I proposed, I thought a pretty simple solution. If you own both parcels from the life of the 2 parcels, in other words, the last ownership, if you own both parcels then or you've owned 2 parcels for a 2-year minimum, then that would have solved the problem, because the whole idea was to take away the Friday to Tuesday quick claim. They'd walk in on a, it literally happened that a person walked in on a Friday with a, you know, quit claim the parcel, and then went in and got them transferred on Tuesday. And then you, you know, but if an extended period of time for it, I think you'd be able to avoid that. That's all.
Well, give a shot with Susan, and then we can relook at that and decide what we want to do. And the powder light is, there's no action on that this month.
Correct.
And Ron, just so we could be thinking about it for next month, can you, do you have handy the numbers for each of those lots? And then in the case of lot four, what was used and what the excess is and what the request is for lot three?
Yes, and I described some of that right here on this table. So the original permit for lot four was 33.85 SFEs. I got an email from Kreider Bancroft, who works with Lomont Land. Some of the square footages on the actual building are a little bit less than what was calculated in the original permit. So lot four, building four, has been adjusted to 33.8 from 33.85 down to 33.29. The permit for lot three is 32.25. We both agree on that number. The lot allocation for lot three was only 6.5. The allocation for lot four was 46. And these were done when the original parcel, which was one big tract, was split into four parcels by Scott Altman and others. And so they didn't know it was going to go in here. So there ends up being a remainder of 12.71, which could be used towards building three. And that's why I'm advocating, why make them go through a lot aggregation to utilize that? It's in the adjacent boundary. So the overall deficiency is 13.05 SFEs to make that permit application whole. And that's the path they're on, working with Housing Trust and Resort Tax.
So they would need 13, just a little over 13, to complete the plans as they desire.
Right. And maybe it goes to 14, even number 14, just to catch any what ifs that might happen in construction. But these things are pre-built, so it's not like the floor plan square footage is going to change in construction.
In fact, I think they're built already and sitting somewhere in Idaho.
I think that's correct.
Well said.
So we're looking at a request of some 14 out of the 500 pool from the interlocal agreement.
That's correct. And Tom and I, we did a meeting with the Resort Tax Committee, before Christmas. It was a good meeting. You know, we put forward that the 500 is going to move to 600, which will adjust that overall to compensate for the fact we're changing workforce housing to 1.20 SFEs per 1,000 square feet. So that doesn't really impact that, our commitment's going to grow, but we're also going to charge more per 1,000 square feet. And then there's some other changes we talked about, which Steve Johnson touched on a minute ago.
We're also talking about eliminating the restriction for us for applying for resort tax money in the future from the 3%.
Right, and that's a key point as well. Just to remind everybody, the original agreement, we lock ourselves out of coming in for requests for any 3% money for the next 20 years, essentially, or as long as the resort tax is there. given all the dynamics of what we're dealing with and costs of these things and cost overruns, we made a request to get back in the queue. So if we needed to, we can come back in with a 3% request. Their board can always say no to anything we might ask, but at least it doesn't totally lock us out. So we think that's a reasonable ask.
So you're looking at the 500 going to 600. Was that right?
Right.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
And that is, Dick, that's all subject to approval of some of the changes we are making in our SFB calculation for employee housing.
Understand.
Anything else on this? Then we're rounding into our normal Scott Bucher time.
By the way, Tom, you're running a heck of a meeting today. 9:05 7, whatever time that
is. He must have a tea time.
I was just going to say, what are your plans this morning?
I have none. This is my plan for this morning.
You're opening up some time for coffee and entertaining today.
No golf, Tom? Right.
Not today. Tomorrow.
That's why we like this committee, our board.
Thanks. The letter, I'll just follow it, drag you through it real quick. The plant expansion upgrade is moving slowly. And RSCI is queued up to come next month to talk about schedule and give you all their own take on the look ahead, in part so that you all can decide whether or not you want to pull the trigger on phase two concrete. Also to inform you about how things are going with the aeration pond clean out, which we've been working with them on and are trying to let them do as much of that as possible with a couple of potential subcontractors in terms of figuring out how that would work and where the sludge would go and setting up agreements with farmers and ranchers down in Gallatin Valley and getting that permitted. So I won't go into a bunch of detail on that project unless somebody has any questions, because I think it'll be a significant chunk of next month's board meeting.
So the aeration, to give some context, is this one right here, or shops, it's here. So it's the one just east of the shop. It's also about 8.5 million gallons, their smallest pond, but the water levels in that thing are static. They don't drop as we go through our irrigation season. So it's a bit tricky to figure out how we're going to clean that thing out. RSCI is helping us find contractors, subcontractors that might do that work. And it's, I think you gave me a spitball number between $500,000 and $1 million project, I think, Scott, didn't you?
I got you muted, Scott, sorry.
Yeah, and that was coming from the subcontractor to RSCI in a meeting we were on, so there'll be some markup for RSCI to take responsibility for the whole thing. And I think when Ron and I and Terry and Youngworth ought to figure out or just make sure we want to proceed with this as a change order to the project and use contingency, or if we want to have RSCI kind of treated as a separate, you know, emergency style project where we wouldn't have to go through a separate bid package for this. And, you know, we might want to get Dan Simmons or somebody on the line with us just to make sure we do this right. Their look ahead schedule's attached. It's mostly working on that tent structure, excavation for reactor slabs and some site piping still. So, you know, it's they're moving slow, but it is, you know, January at 6,600 feet in Montana. So
I don't think anybody anticipated them making a ton of progress right now. We are still chewing through lots of submittals and RFIs, so the paper progress is good. The dirt progress is slow. Kelsey got your PER in for the Mountain Village water system improvements last week as part of that ARPA, renewed ARPA effort. And as soon as we know something about ARPA's review process, we'll pass it along.
Do we know, do they have a deadline to make awards? I haven't seen anything. I think Kelsey's on the call too.
I have not seen anything. I don't know if she has a commitment to get back to the public, you mean?
Yeah, so they gave us a January 14 hard deadline to submit. I haven't seen anything that lays out a schedule for the legislative committee to act on the proposal.
So I haven't seen anything committed either, but I did hear some talk of turning around results in May.
That'd be moving a little slower than they did last time, but maybe that's a good thing. I don't know.
Yeah, I think they wanted to give applicants time with the other funding deadlines that happen in February and March and April before they gave their results for whatever reason.
Good.
Budgets are in good shape, other than district engineering services at 15 remaining there. And we've got some work coming up with Roshway and the Cottonwood stuff. So I'll probably write you a letter requesting a re-injection there to put that back at 50 or 100. AWIA risk and resilience work is done pretty much. So I'll probably stop showing that on this ledger. And then the indirect potable reuse feasibility study, I thought was pretty much done. Mark did call me about the source capacity analysis and asking me some questions about what could we show coming from there if it was in the best interest of the district during that work in the future. And I told him, you know, you could show 50 GPM or 100 or 200 above that, and you start worrying about where the water's coming from and if everybody else is getting their fair share for golf courses or snowmaking. But that's flexible, but it sounded like he wanted to leave the door open to whether or not it was going to be necessary or not, so I'll leave that open. Kelsey has a summary in here of submittals for that Mountain Village water system improvements. And then we also gave Ron a draft scope for moving forward with design. There's some details in there that we need to discuss about things that can be parsed out for others, like whether it's geotech and survey or Mark Cunane's well work, or if you want that all under one umbrella, or that's your up to you. And so we just need to finalize that before you all would advertise an RFQ for that work. Collection system model is moving. Donovan's working on your network model. We're still working on your irrigation water balance just to support Roshway and moving into the March court date. Succession planning, meaning Ron and I and Jen, I don't think we've done much in December, and just want to make note of that. If we want to get together and schedule a meeting and look at those org charts we showed briefly last month and talk about next steps on hiring, we're glad to do that, but I'll let Ron and Mike lead that. I'll be up there next week to meet with Western Industrial and your staff to look at reuse booster stations. We want to look at an alternative pump technology in there and get an idea of, first of all, is it feasible from a pump curve and duty point and all that, but also from piping and valving rework that would have to take place in those stations to accommodate a new pump style. And that's about it. I think look forward to next month when Trent from RSCI will be here and we'll let you hear straight from him how things are going and what it looks like in terms of adding phase two concrete to the project, as well as aeration pond clean out. And like I said, I think Ron, you and I, and Terry, and maybe Dan ought to just talk about the gymnastics of these additions and how we structure them from a contractual perspective. Probably pull Susan in as well, just to make sure we do all this right. If SRF or, you know, USDA was somebody like that was heavily involved, it would all be much more onerous. With private funding, we have more degrees of freedom, but I still want to make sure it's all done right.
Ron, I've got a question that might apply to Scott Bucher. Is where are we on looking at wastewater disposal in the Canyon Sewer District?
Tom, that's a great question. And if Mace or Mark Cunane are on the line and can talk, they're the ones doing that work. And
Mark was going to look at how the flows make their way through the land.
I met with Mace in December at his office in Bozeman. He gave me a update on the work he's done. I think he's got enough work done to this point that it makes sense to try to bring him into a meeting, maybe the February meeting, to give us an update on what they've done to date, findings, kind of things they've got to do to close out their reports. So I'd be happy to contact him and invite him to give us a presentation next month.
Yeah, again, just a reminder for everybody is the construction of any pipeline down to the Canyon Sewer District was dependent on having wastewater disposal available.
Yes, and I can tell you from the work they've done to this point, it does look still favorable to do that. I don't think they fully have defined volumes. You've got a lot of private wells down in the canyon that make big, large-scale drain fields problematic with setbacks to those wells. They've kind of shifted some of their focus to doing well injection points instead of big drain fields, which could work. You know, it's a DEQ thing that has to get permitted, but it's an interesting concept. I know the district in the canyon also is trying to get a committee going that'll be more active in 2022, looking at the whole canyon disposal development for central wastewater. I've been asked to sit on that committee, because I know a couple things about this, but I'm happy to participate in that effort. So.
Well, you got a lot of spare time, so that should not be a problem, right?
I love your sense of humor, Tom.
This litigation doesn't take any time at all. Let's just check the box and move on, right?
Yeah.
You just spent some litigation. They're my two biggest nightmares.
Right. So I will reach out to Mays, see if he can come into our meeting next month to give us an update.
That'd be great. Anything else for Scott?
Well, I think the next item, we'll want Scott to sit in on this as well, which is the bid alternate two, phase two work.
Yes.
So I wrote up some narrative on this. Terry and I met last week to kind of look at the big picture of the cost to award bid alternate number two at $4.923 million, which was the number that was given to us at the time of bid. I think it was Mike Dukenoy that had asked for a analysis of if we award alternate two, how could that be funded? So Terry and I sat down and looked at the cost of this and potential sources of funds, which I've outlined down here. Just a little bit of more history on this. So we awarded these two. We actually pre-procured and purchased this $1.5 million line item. Base bid, we did award alternate number one. Nothing in alternate two, three, or four was awarded. RCI said, hey, you guys, we'll hold that price till July of 2022. Given the fact we're seeing increases in costs all over the place as we build this stuff, they've told us that number probably will change. So we need to pin him down on what that number is going to be, obviously, before we can make a decision on it. So at the February meeting,
they don't want to stick to their promise of July now.
I don't know. You know, so that's our kickback would be, you gave us a number, here's the number, this is what we're willing to fund.
How did you memorialize that, Scott? You're on mute.
Sorry. We do have that in writing, but we also have their letter asking for 90 extra days with four changes in rebar costs on the rebar that they're buying for phase one. So, you know, I think we just need to sit down with them. We've brought it up that, hey, I know you're paying more for rebar, but you also have a concrete batch plant here that wasn't in the works either. So
yeah,
I think it's a negotiation.
Okay. Sorry, Ron.
We also have to understand what the savings is by doing it now versus not doing it now.
You're correct. I mean, this is a great example of why we need to be in the 3% queue for resort tax. You know, we could go fund this out of what we've put forward, but if this cost becomes bigger than what we're looking at here, for us to come in and ask for the difference makes some sense with resort tax. But I had suggested when Trent's here that we have our construction committee, which is our two mics, sit down with these guys, make some time to come in and meet as a group to talk through this whole alternate number two cost timeline and when it would be constructed, all of that. So to the potential funding sources, Terry, I'm going to let you describe our work here. I'm going to run and grab a cup of coffee.
Okay.
We'll take it from here.
Okay. So item one is the remainder on RSCI's contract through their November submittal. We just received a submittal for work through December, so that's not included in there. The same for the A2S construction contract administration. They've got 2.7, 2.8 million left on there. So the total on our existing contracts for the plant is $41,090,000. The items below outline our funding for it. The F, our First Security Bank loan, we haven't drawn anything on it other than the first, the origination fee that was charged, as well as the legal costs from First Security Bank. So there's $42.4 million left there. In our PIC account, we've got approximately 2.4 now. In the sewer asset replacement, we've got 6.4. The resort tax funds that we've collected so far this year is 1.35 million. We still have another 1.35 to collect before June 30th. The future resort tax funds, that's the minimum amount that they would be submitting to us for fiscal 22 and 23. That's an additional 5.6 million. And then the ARPA funding that we're in process of collecting right now, another 2 million. So combined, we've got 61.3 million available for the project.
Is there some overlap there? The FSB loan includes the 42 million, includes the 26 that resort tax committed to on the 1%, I take it?
No. That's
the 1.3 and 5.5 and all that.
Right. And so,
we can't act like that's revenue against project costs, because that's revenue that's supposed to go against the 42, right? We're supposed to pay back the 42 million with the resort tax funding, not stacking it.
No, when we originally put this together with the resort tax, one of the things that we would be doing is we'd be spending the resort, because we don't have any debt service yet with respect to the FSB loan. So as we're going, we're going to be using those resort tax funds to borrow less. So at the end of the day, we may not borrow that entire 42.3, but we're going to spend all that resort tax money towards the project as we go.
The only problem I have with that is you're acting like the $42 million is ours to spend, but in reality, we don't have a mechanism to pay that back if we tap into all 42.
Yes, we do. What we're doing is we're working towards getting our rates to cover the debt service when the resort tax money dries up. So going out, 2032?
We're doing 30 years, and the resort tax commitment doesn't cover all of that.
Right. The resort tax goes out to 2032. Right. What we're in our financial plan that we put together, when that money dries up from the resort tax, our rates and charges will be sufficient to cover the debt service on that. So we're not going to be packing away the $6 million that we collect, or $8 million we collect from the resort tax, to pay future debt service. We're going to use that money today to pay the contract until we close out the entire project. So.
Yeah, no, I understand that. I'm just trying to get to the point. I'm just trying to get to the point of the $42 million of bonding that we did with the bank. I just recall a big portion of that. I realize we're not going to use that much of it, so we're going to offset it by the 26 million. So really, the 42 minus 26 is what we intend on taking out for a loan.
That's what
we intended at the front side of this underwriting.
Yeah.
Right now, when you look at our obligations today, we're at 41 million remaining contract balance. I don't know. One thing to point out, we've been watching this PIC fund account balance drop dramatically since we started. And the reason for that is we're spending money out of the PIC funds to fund the project. So we have spent $3.9 million to date out of the PIP fund. And we've committed, I think, about $6 million total to do that. So we're doing what we said we would do. We really haven't showed you the draws against the PIP fund in this kind of detail. But so that creates some room in this as well for the fact that we're using up our funds at the front end of this, which would reduce that potential loan obligation on the back end. So that's why we've shown, you know, these differences that we haven't touched at all. The loan, we haven't done draws on the loan.
Yeah, no, I get that. And we don't anticipate. I just want to make sure we have the right representation here, that we have a $41 million remaining to spend, but we have a $61 million kitty to spend it from. That makes sense, but I think it's a false sense of optimism when the $42 million, especially if we're overspending some of our other funds right now, that if we draw all that $42 million, I'd like to see the plan of paying that back plus the cliff, the 10-year cliff that's happening on that bank loan. I mean, there is a big balloon that's going to amplify. I can't remember what year it is, but it was like 10 years or something like that if we were to draw all 42. I'm afraid that this gives a $20 million sense of security, but we weren't anticipating spending $61 million.
Right. The financial plan we had, though, when that cliff occurs, we put in place the rates and charges to cover that debt service in the event that we do. Because the plan, when that financial model was put together, we didn't say we were going to spend less. We were going to spend it all. And we wanted to make sure that at that cliff point, that the rates and charges were sufficient to cover the debt service without any resort tax money. So in my mind, this is a legitimate way to look at it at this point. We're hoping we don't spend it all.
Yeah, but that was based on a pay down that was happening before we hit the cliff. So that's what I'm saying is like the resort tax funding was paying down the note. If we draw all 42, the cliff is bigger. We can have a sidebar discussion on this, but the cliff was modeled at like whatever it was, 26 million or 26 million minus the 41 or whatever. It was modeled at a different rate than the full 42 while we spend resort tax money elsewhere.
Right. Well, at the February meeting, we'll bring in that same table that we used before, and we'll have a full representation of, in the event that we spend it all out, what that cliff's going to look like and how we're going to get there if that indeed occurs. Is that?
Yeah, sufficient? That's fair.
Yeah.
Am I remembering this wrong, or is this exactly a little bit? Am I right, or am I dead wrong? Because I just thought we were paying down the 42.
I'm not sure where you're going with your argument. Do we not fund this, or are we looking to fund this?
Well, my debate is founded on the fact that it's showing that we have $20 million in excess of money to spend on this project, and I don't believe that that's the case.
Okay.
I believe we have the $20 million excess to spend. I'm not confident that we have a plan to pay it back.
Right. And that's what I'm saying is that at February's board meeting, we'll bring back in that schedule and show how the district is going to pay for this in the event that we spend it all.
All right. Sorry. I don't mean to belabor.
Well, we got time on this, Mike.
Yeah.
You know, this is the first look at this. We're going to be meeting with RRCI in February. So we've got time. To get this
Scott, let me know when you want to get together with Mike and I, and we'll sit down and talk about what this cost for phase two is going to look like.
Yep. And I'll get Ryan Graff queued up for February as well. He can speak to how the model shows that paid back down.
Hey, Mike, this is Dick. Is what you're saying that we had that $42 million line of credit, but we were not going to spend it all because of other sources?
Yeah, that was the case. And then we're going to save ourselves the interest.
Yeah.
That was going to be part of that, which was going to be a benefit to the project.
And to the rate.
So our intent was to only draw on that loan the residual balance, not the full balance. I mean, we double protected ourselves. We underwrote the loan for the full amount. Yeah. We had other sources and we're going to use less of that money. So I think that's where I'm at.
Right. Now we're looking at using that as a bonus to get phase two.
Well, we're optically looking at it like it's all available. And
yeah.
And it is all available. There's no doubt about it. But the underwriting for the loan required us not or to use some of the funds. We're kind of double spending, I think.
Yeah. We were thinking we'd get that amount, but offset it with other sources and not have to use the ratepayers to pay it back.
And now we're smartly using the other sources as a direct cost of the construction because we're not paying interest against a loan on that. So that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we're way ahead on resort tax collections from what our modeling was because we were modeling a 3% increase year to year on resort tax. And it's right now it's going up in the 30 to 30% plus range.
Oh, so, that'd be interesting to look at too, Tom. That's a good point.
Yep. Phase two is true future capacity for connections, not existing ratepayers too, that might play into how that's modeled. But I need Ryan Bryden shotgun to help me with that.
Is there a way to forecast pick charges that might be coming in?
Right. And that's one of the things I didn't add was future pick charges. There would be another $800,000 line item in there if we put it in.
And the number went up on pick charges.
Yeah.
I mean, the big takeaway in this is that our first initial look, it looks favorable that, yeah, we can get this figured out or we can make this award. We'll come back and make the payment stream a little more clear for the next meeting. But first cut looks good.
I think the updated model is a good idea. I do think that all 43 or 42 million is probably not available. It would be a good idea to know how many will we see, you know, coming in for big charges down the road. Also, we have any indication like on Montage Online now, but what that means for revenues, what that looks like?
We've done some initial looking at Montage, the Montage's water usage up there. We haven't converted that into revenue yet, but
I think that hotel is only 30% open right now. So even that modeling is probably too soon to count on.
Hmm. We also need to make sure you don't want the aeration pond clean out as a line item in here. Without it, I think it means that that would be paid for out of that contingency that's behind that 42.36 number.
Right.
So I guess what it comes down to, it's complicated.
Yeah.
Well, I understand where Mike's coming from, and I'm concerned on it, but yeah. I don't think it's safe. Well, maybe it is more immediate because we're looking at spending 15 more million of that, right, for phase two? And we have to make a decision.
It'd be probably like 6 million at the end of the day. When we get done talking to the contractor, they're probably going to up that by 20% or something like that. I'd say on the top side, it'd be 6.
Okay, and we need to make that decision when?
By July 1st.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with Mike on that. I think a top end number would be 6.
Okay.
Dick, I think Tom.
Go ahead, Scott.
The number Dick was throwing around, I think, is if we fleshed that all out with all the equipment and the membrane building expansion and everything, Dick, versus what phase two concrete alone is just go ahead and pour the boxes between the existing plant and the mountain while it's all torn apart.
Yeah. Okay.
Come back later and flesh it all out for the complete expansion to basically 2 MGD.
Hey, Terry, when you put that evaluation together for February, let's take a look at current constituents in the district and their rate increases that you'd have to rely on to make this payback work if we were to spend all 61 or whatever, because that was another piece of our campaign was, to Scott's point, this basin work, this phase two work is for future connections and you know, having our constituents pay the way to that might be an interesting political move.
Okay.
I'm also anxious to see Terry's work on the year by year flows, ins and outs on this.
Yeah, because we're gonna have that table that the bank produced or DA Davidson produced or whatever is a good tool.
Well, Fran's crew keeps kicking butt on I&I. Some of these membranes are going to be either off or awfully lightly loaded. I mean, it's a great thing. It's just flows are not, you know, increasing. I think because of all the INI work they put in last 2 years.
Well, and the lack of snowpack probably helps that.
Yeah, yeah, good point. That might be
not to diminish Ron's efforts on INI.
Mike, you're kind of a Debbie Downer today.
Yeah, I'm just coming off of COVID, so yeah, I'm on the COVID recovery.
So I know the Bobcats lost, but it's been a week now. So.
Yeah, all right.
Fair enough.
Well, thank you everyone for your contributions on this subject.
Yep, I think that's all I have, and I'll drop out now unless there's something else. But Ron, I'll make Graf watch this 15 minutes of the recording and be ready to improve the details next time.
Sounds good.
I think we're on to the Flatiron.
Well, we got the ARPA funding very quickly. I wrote a little paragraph about that. There was one major change. The program basically put out for all the applicants that the maximum ask was only going to be $2 million, which matches up with the maximum awards they did in round one. So we adjusted our application from $5.5 million down to $2 million per their directive. So that's why our ask has dropped. For the fact we got a 30% PER submitted, our first round score was pretty decent. I think we were 115. You know, the probability we would get in the queue for funding is pretty good. Kelsey, I don't know if you want to add to that at all.
Kelsey had to drop off, but
okay.
That's our hope too, is they wiped out 74 of those ahead of us, and we feel like we strengthened the argument and got you some engineering to make it the optics look better.
Right. So we think we'll do well. That's why I was asking earlier when they'll make a decision. Sounds like May potentially. But I think we're in pretty good shape. I did put a copy of the whole submittal in the board packet, of which the draft audit report was in there, so it grows it to 100 pages or something. But we'll see how we do. So Flatiron, under old business developments.
Hey, Ron, we had the Mountain Village well exploration. I know it's kind of Mark's thing.
Right, so that report, the updated report that Mark referred to, is right here. So this was the revised report he was referring to, mm-hmm. where he took into account the water quality issue. Mm-hmm. So that report's in the packet. I don't know if Mark's still on the meeting. I don't know that there's anything to add to this.
No, I think he dropped off.
He dropped off. Okay. So that's what he was talking about.
Yeah. Doesn't look like that iron and manganese are quite a more substantial issue than initially hoped for. So that's something we'll have to plan for.
Yep. So Flatiron, the interim planner for Madison County is a consulting engineer who works with Great West up in Helena.
Yeah, Cody?
Jerry Greenbaum. Oh. Greenback. I think they got a new planner identified coming in.
They got an interim. It's Cody. It's a gal.
Cody is still the assistant planner, and she's trying to do everything she can do to keep the wheels on, but it's pretty tough over there right now.
Right. So Ray West is their engineer of record, so they've stepped in to act as the interim planner for the county. He reached out to me and wanted to do a phone call, which I turned into a Zoom meeting to just show them our district boundary, where things are in relation to the proposals that are part of the Madison County piece of the Flatiron development. And he also told me that the meeting that was scheduled for January 31st has been pushed back a full month at the request of the applicant. So the meeting where they'll take this up will be February 28th at 6 p.m. And we ended it. I say, call me if you have any other questions.
Ron, this is Tom. Do you have any formal application from Flatiron asking to be in our district?
No, we don't. And I, told Jerry that, we've got nothing in front of us requesting annexation. There is a piece of the development that is in the district. And has been in the district since its creation. And that's the northwest quarter of section 29. This area right here has always been in the water and sewer district boundary. And I think they did that just to round out the boundary to a quarter section straight line. In reality, this probably should have been described around block 6 of the Cascade subdivision and then gone to the north. You've got boundaries going back to the old RID 305, our predecessor organization, that shows that was part of the original RID district boundary. So all of this, of course, is not in the district, nor is this. And so,
that area you're looking at, just so everybody understands what that is. That's just down in a steep, steep gully right there.
Right there. It's really kind of unbuildable. I've always thought, but who knows?
It's kind of the mine shaft.
Yeah.
Well said.
I do know that their proposal, they've got contingencies where if we don't connect them or annex them, they're putting forward that they would build their own treatment facility down there. What that looks like, I don't know. But originally, that was all planned for on-site wastewater disposal, and that changed at some point. But so I just spent time showing them who's what and where our boundaries are.
Ron, where do we stand with the water surveys there for the wells? Our evaluation of their claims?
Yeah, Mark gave us his report. One of the recommendations in that report was more work would need to be done if we were going to take those things on. For the fact that we're moving water right appropriations off Cascade 5 and 6 to test well 7 and 8, I don't know that we would have water right provisions that could be utilized to put water volumes on those wells. To our knowledge, they haven't filed a water right for their wells down there. For the fact they drilled those test wells tells us that they knew they would need more water supply for that. So we haven't done anything since Mark's report kind of outlined steps. More pump testing would need to be done. Using that water to pump up to the Mountain Village is not an easy task. Clearly, the wells have some merit, both in water quality and quantity.
The two wells they drilled?
Right. And if you remember, the wells are very close together, but they're completed in different bedrock aquifers. So when you pump test one, you get no drawdown impact to the other, which is a very unique circumstance around here. So the wells have merit for sure. All those get water righted to provide water for all that development down there. I'm not sure what their plans are for that.
I guess my concern is this thing seems to be moving ahead without a lot of confidence in the water, with kind of an assumption that it's going to be taken care of, getting the cart ahead of the horse. Do we need to get more involved in this? Or do we have time to do it?
Well, I think the only time we can get involved with it is when they actually formally apply to the district, right?
That's kind of been our stance, is there's nothing in front of us. We don't, you know, what happens, typically these things go to planning, they get approved, they come into us when they start doing subdivisions for capacity waters. I mean, it's a fair question, Dick, but it would be out of sequence what we typically do. And what the Gallatin County approval had 65 conditions.
63.
I would assume Madison County's would be something similar to that.
Am I correct? The Gallatin County required that their part in Gallatin be serviced by the Water and Sewer District?
I believe so, right.
Which means water and sewer, right?
Yeah, and there's no commitment for water from us, so all our entitlements were wrapped into our agreement to provide sewer capacity only.
Yeah.
And for the fact that that was the only thing they had in hand, the original developers, Dolan and others, drilled test wells there because they knew they would need more water. They were also, they did come in with an annexation request years ago for this thumb property. They were going to do a hotel down there, and they were gearing up for all that, and they knew they would need more water to do those things. So they drilled test wells, and then everything stopped in time. But to our knowledge, those test wells don't have any water rights associated with them. And this actually was a full annexation petition that got second reading and then never was approved by the board. So it sat there, second reading approved, never got third reading. Since then, we haven't had anything else.
Dick, this is pretty typical of developer process that's concurrent. You know, they'll go through the county process, but every county approval will hinge on water and sewer availability before anything's approved. So I think to answer your question a little bit, this isn't going to like be sleepy in the night, all of a sudden approved, and then we have to serve it. That won't happen.
Yeah.
Okay.
Any action items?
Not under this. Yes,
I just want to double check.
This is all FYI. Okay. The next advancement of this development. I know this has been a very hot button topic around Big Sky for developments, and our role in this is, you know, we haven't gone to hearings to weigh in on supporting or not supporting any of these things.
Well, there's a lot to learn. I mean, you just gotta, for right now, there's so many moving parts, but
right.
You know, the one thing that's coming our way, which is not necessarily connected to this, I think there continues to be a drumbeat about water availability for our ratepayers. And I think we need to at least, you know, recognize that and communicate our situation. It's great to have updates that we're making progress, 10 wells, going this, and this. But that's not necessarily related to this project.
Right.
Is that you're not going to all of a sudden run out of water. People like to know that.
Well, and the two wells that were drilled for the Lone Moose condo parcel have never worked out to be even close to what the original pump test showed. So these are 20 GPM wells. We know there's not enough water with these two wells to support even a fraction of what's being proposed.
And that's compared to 20 GPM.
So kind of in summary, the Gallatin approval required that we service them water and sewer for the next phases when they come in with subdivision. But Gallatin or Madison County hasn't heard it yet, and we don't know if that would be a requirement or condition for Madison County. Is that correct?
That's correct. The wastewater side, they've set themselves up to go to us if possible, but if we don't serve them, they're prepared to go it alone.
It'll be a requirement for any phase they do is to get DEQ approval. They can't file an entitlement until they have DEQ approval, whether that's on site or their own solutions or something that we provide. So there will never be a situation where all of a sudden they have condominiums without DEQ approval.
Right.
For what it's worth, I met recently with John Heckler, the new commissioner over in Madison County, and he specifically wanted to talk a little bit about this and is very focused on water and sewer issues with regard to this development. So I expect that will come up when they hear it at their February meeting of the planning board over there.
Yeah, and he reached out to me, Kevin Germain kind of teed it up, and then John sent me an email, said he was going to try to be in Big Sky on a few Thursdays in January. I emailed him back, but we haven't pinned down a date to actually sit down and meet face-to-face. I'm happy to do it with him. He took Jim Hart's place for the commission there.
That's encouraging, Ron.
Yeah.
Ron, if we weren't able to secure water rights for these wells, what is the steps they would have to do to get their own water rights?
Great question. I don't know what they would have to do.
Herculean, unfounded in the last 10 years.
5 years, 6 years, yeah.
Right. I do know that they've got a very capable team working on this. Matt Williams is helping them with water right issues. Matt's one of the best water right attorneys I know in Montana. So I know they're looking at it, what their plans are. I don't.
Sounds like that might be the biggest hurdle on this whole thing, because my calculations, when they were talking about what their wells could produce, it would essentially take care, 90% of that water would go towards their own build out.
Correct. Yeah.
And so the benefit to our district would be minimal, especially given the fact that it's in the wrong place.
Correct. And, you know, Mark Kinane would want to go in and do more pump testing on those wells to fully vet them as the district should. So, and we're not going to do that in dead of winter, obviously. But,
right. Well, yeah. I still think we ought to consider drilling a test well up on that access road off of Deer Park Meadows. Or not the Meadows, but Deer Park.
Elk Park. Just to Elk make Park. Sure. Yeah. Don't want to confuse anyone.
Yeah, Elk Park. Sorry. Yeah. All right. So I think we're done with that. We're on to District Ordinance 97-1001.
Right, and Susan and I met in her office in Bozeman a couple weeks ago. We were doing two things. One was looking at potter light potential options for us there. And then the second piece was looking at these ordinance amendments. You know, I had emailed her, put forward these concepts. I think after today's meeting, we'll go back and look at some of that language that's in the Section 4, the old reallocation stuff, because I do think that should be reworked as well. So this was kind of the task list I put forward, and she's going to work on cleaning up the narratives and getting us a resolution and a new ordinance to consider for second readings. I don't have those yet. We should have them by the February meetings. This rate resolution will put in the new category for workforce housing, 1.20 SFDs per thousand
I think there's redundancy in it, in that if you read it now, you got the first section, it references our current rates, and then it puts new rates in the second part. I'd like to clean that up so you have your narrative and just refer to an exhibit with your new rates. It just seems to read clunky to me. So she's going to look at that, and we'll have something for the February meeting. On succession planning, we had a great send-off for Grant, who's not here today. He's doing pottery or something. Adam's sitting here over my left and doing a great job stepping in. GM, we need to kick that up with our committee. And so Bill, Brian, Mike, we need to get some dates pinned down to start interviewing candidates. And I knew this wouldn't happen when Christmas, New Year's, all that. So we just got to figure it out.
Sit around and drink hot cocoa with Mike and I. That's all we're
doing. I'm sure.
I mean, that would be. You got a return call, buddy.
I will get back to you guys to figure scheduling out on what works to ramp this up and get going on the GM interviews. Legal, I put a copy of the judge's scheduling order in the packet. Trial date March 23rd in view. Want to move into new business, election of officers?
Sure.
January each year, we put this on the agenda to reorganize the board if the board chooses to. My thought on this is we've got elections coming up in May. Tom will be done at the end of May. His term as a board member. And you could keep the same slate and then redo this once we get through the election. You can redo it now if you want. But currently, Tom's president, Brian's vice, Peter's treasurer, and Dick is still our longstanding secretary. Thank you, Dick. So I'll open it up to the board to see what your wishes are on this.
I think we wait till we have new trustees on board, right?
That's my recommendation.
Yeah.
Unless Tom has a desire to change his role.
I'm willing to go either way. So I'll defer to the other board members.
Tom, are you not running again?
I am not running again. Sorry, I don't plan to own property in the district after this year. So,
we'll miss you.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
So it looks like the president position would come open. Brian will still be on through December.
Right. So I went back and looked at our records on this. I actually corrected Gallatin County's roster. They had Brian wrong. They had one expiring in 24 and one in 22. Both our appointed directors' terms expired December 1 of 22. Bill Shropshire is our appointed Gallatin County. Brian's our appointed Madison County directors. So we actually have potentially four changes in the board this year. The election will happen in May. And I think this is actually May 3rd, not the 10th. I'll fix that. So Tom will step down. Peter certainly can rerun. He's not moving as far as I know. And there is a filing window, and it's the election's May 3rd. Filing window is to February 7th. I've got a draft notice in the board packet on this that I intend to get to the papers. We're a little bit behind on the window for advertising. The county does advertise this, so from a legal standpoint, they take care of advertising all the special elections, but Historically, we have put an ad in the paper in Big Sky just to let people know these elections are happening. So Lone Peak Lookout being a weekly, we can get it in three editions prior to the filing deadline of February 7th. Explore Big Sky, there'd be one issue January 25th that we can make. So my intention is to put this forward so we can get something in the local papers.
My recommendation would be, since we would have one vacancy, Peter, assume, is running again, and but we never know for sure on that. And since that is a possible change after May 3rd or February 3rd, why don't we wait until March, April, or the May.
Yeah, so the election's May 3,
yeah.
And we would know shortly after that. So the May meeting, third Tuesday, we could put this back on the agenda to reorganize.
Agreed.
Yeah. So there's a lot of nodding heads in the room, but just leave it as it is.
Okay, I guess that's settled then. New developments and subdivisions.
Justin Hauser, he always sends us, as a courtesy, development plans and stuff up in YC, which I do appreciate that we get those. I did put them in the board packet, but it doesn't affect the district. I did. Our agreements with the Yellowstone Club cover phases 1, 2, and 3 of Andesite Mountain. I'm not sure. The one, maybe Mike Duke and I, you can help me with this one, but it looked like one of these might be up in phase 3 of Andesite. It really doesn't impact us, though, because our commitment to provide water doesn't change. Just because they're developments.
Scroll down a little bit. It's Pioneer Landing. I would say it's not in phase 3.
That's not. There's a second one here. Let me get to it. There's this one here. Lone View, Happy Ranch.
That's in that property that's not a new subdivision. That's probably just a reorganization of the existing subdivision. So that guy's changed that subdivision around like no less than 5 times. But it used to be 9 lots and now it's truncating down to, or maybe 14 lots and now it's truncating down to 3 or 4. So someone had bought all those lots up there. And so it's actually an aggregation application, probably to the benefit of the district.
Yeah, but I think that might be in phase 3 or
it's in that 3A. It's in that old Cal Flats area that we bought from Big Sky.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, it's FYI. There's no action or anything, but
so now you know how in tune I am with Yellowstone Club development stuff. But yeah, well, that is an aggregation of a bunch of lots.
Okay. All right. And then down to permitting, we're down to 93. I don't know that we have any big ones coming in the next month or so, but we'll end up doing a release of more SFEs at some point here, probably first quarter of 22. Permit activity back to July 1. And then at year end, I usually put together some year end graphs just to show how we're doing. 2021, we issued 364 SFEs and permits, up quite a bit from 2020, which has a big asterisk under it with COVID, but on par with 2019. 2016's an asterisk because that was the montage at 277 SFEs. So that created the biggest number we've ever had, but one permit was the reason for that.
If you exclude that, your this past year is the biggest we've ever had.
That's right. If you drive out on Jive. In 98, that was the old Summit Hotel, which then was the biggest tournament in our history, and Montage surpassed that. 2004, 5, and 6, that was just a lot of growth in Big Sky. 2008 was the Great Recession. Let me climb out of that. This graph just shows permits against remodeling permits. So, you know, we issue permits for remodeling projects all the time. The red part are the actual new builds, the blue parts are the remodels.
Looks like the ratio is pretty consistent.
It is. We always
just kind of flows with it.
Right.
Seeing some teardowns.
That's, yeah. I predicted that for years, and we'll see teardowns.
You're going to start seeing more of them?
In West Fork and Little Coyote Road, you're going to see that.
Spotted Elk.
Yeah.
Two of the remodels, friends that did remodels, both said, man, I should have torn it down. It's 2x4 construction.
Yeah. So that's all FYI stuff. And then under the general correspondence, I added snowpack reports back into that. They're not, I was surprised by some of them and not surprised by some of them. This one, but it was dated December 8th. I'm not sure why it hasn't been updated, but this kind of matched up with the way we started in December. Everybody was way down. These map representations show that we're running 90 to 100%, which seems overly optimistic to me.
No.
Right?
No.
Yeah.
Are you serious? Has everybody been on the mountain?
Well, no.
Farm?
I'm actually waiting for this one to get updated because they had it right. And so, but I'll continue to put these in. Danny sent some stuff out, an update on just what's going on with the COVID testing kits that are available in Big Sky that's in the board packet. A couple other emails and whatnot. And I think that covers everything I've got. Next meeting date, tentatively for February 15th. Is that right?
That's a short one.
Yeah, that is right.
One, two, three.
That's the third Tuesday.
Is it going to happen then? Too short a cycle for you?
I'm good for the 15th.
Okay.
No, that, you know, we got so much stuff coming at us. If we push these things out, it really doesn't help. So I
would like to get that ordinance put to bed too, Nick.
Yeah. No,
with the final version so we can get that second reading in.
Yeah, I agree. So I'd like to just keep it on the 15th.
All right. I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn. Wow. What took you so long?
Motion by Peter Manka, second by.
Meeting. You need a second.
Second.
Yep. All those in favor say aye.
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 See y'all.